Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, ConocoOxy split on output outlook. CEOs disagree on whether shift from fossil fuels will stop oil from peaking. By Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. The chief executives of the nation's two largest independent oil companies disagree on whether U.S. crude production will return to the record set before the pandemic-driven oil crash. Vicki Hollub, CEO of Houston-based Occidental Petroleum, and Ryan Lance, CEO of Houston-based ConocoPhillips, laid out different expectations for U.S. oil production on Monday during back-to-back talks at Argus Media's Crude Summit in downtown Houston. U.S. crude production peaked at 13 million barrels per day in February 2020, before economic lockdowns and travel restrictions plunged crude demand and prices. Production has since recovered to around 11.7 million barrels per day, but whether it will surpass previous highs remains up for debate as the world starts shifting away from fossil fuels. I don't think we'll ever get to that level, Hollub said. I do think we'll get over 12 million barrels per day going into next year. That 400 rig should be able to get us to somewhere around 12.5 million or above, but probably not to the 13 million. Yeah, we will, Lance said, less than an hour later. Some are saying no way, but we will. As oil companies recover from the pandemic and face an existential threat posed by climate change, the industry remains split on whether oil production has peaked already or will peak in the coming decades. Oxy believes U.S. production may have peaked as the world embraces the so-called energy transition. The company, which has ambitions to become a leading carbon management company, has invested heavily in carbon capture technology over the past couple of years, including developing its first direct air carbon capture facility in the Permian Basin of West Texas. The company was the first U.S. oil company to set net zero targets for its operations and customers' emissions and aims to become a net zero emissions company by 2040. Conoco, on the other hand, still believes U.S. production will continue to grow for decades as the world's growing population remains reliant on crude and natural gas for energy. The company, which has ambitions to become net zero by 2050, has spent $20 billion over the past couple of years to acquire Concho Resources and Shell's Permian assets to expand its footprint in the Permian Basin, becoming the second largest shale producer in the nation's most prolific oil field. Hollub, on Monday, said she believes the U.S. shale industry will continue to rebound and grow, especially in the DJ Basin of Colorado, the Eagle Ford of South Texas, and the Bakken of North Dakota. However, she said she doesn't expect drilling activity in those fields will get back to pre-pandemic levels. That's in large part, Hollub said, because oil companies have become more efficient at producing oil with fewer rigs. I don't think any of those basins necessarily will achieve the peak that they had previously, Hollub said. We're not only drilling faster, we're getting more out of every well we drill than we did a few years ago. Lance, however, said most petroleum economists expect global oil demand is going to continue to rise in the near future, perhaps peaking between 2030 and 2040 and starting a slow decline. Yet even with declining demand for crude and natural gas, the energy industry will still require billions of dollars of investments to continue supplying the world with fossil fuels, he said. The industry is probably investing at half that pace when you consider what needs to be invested over the next 10 to 20 years, Lance said. I've been quoted that we're setting up for a messy transition. Despite their differences of opinion on the direction of U.S. oil production, Holub and Lance both agreed that the oil industry will need to work with governments, industry, investors, and even environmental groups to cut carbon emissions to keep producing oil and gas at whatever level the world demands. Both Holub and Lance decried the recent COP26 United Nations Climate Conference in Glasgow, where leaders ramped up emissions targets but left without concrete plans on how to meet them. Not a single oil company sat in any of the official meetings at COP26. We were not invited, Holub said. And without the oil and gas industry, there is no way that addressing climate change will ever be successful. Lance, in particular, warned that a quick and disruptive energy transition, where oil and gas investment and production falls well before demand lets up, could leave the world paying higher energy prices. The amount of oil and natural gas discovered globally last year fell to the lowest level in 75 years, after oil companies slashed their exploration budgets during the pandemic-driven downturn. There's an orderly way to go about this energy transition, if you choose to go do it, Lance said. Unfortunately, I think most of the dialogue and the consequence coming out of COP26, including where this Biden administration wants to go, is a cliff transition, and there's nothing right or just about that. This article is entitled Candidates Take Stage at NRHA Forum. County Judge. Law enforcement facilities among topics covered by Smoot Johnson. By Stuart Doreen. County Judge candidates Terry Johnson and Jonna Smoot discussed issues ahead of the March 1st primary election at the National Republican Hispanic Assembly's Candidate Forum Monday at the Bush Convention Center. The forum was a first opportunity for the two Republicans to answer questions and offer their respective visions in an extended event. Topics included law enforcement facilities, taxation, elections, water, and the Horseshoe Complex. The following are highlights from the forum. About law enforcement facilities and the recent reveal that new facilities could cost up to $180 million, according to a study presented to the Commissioner's Court. It was asked, based on this recent announcement, if candidates would comply not to raising property taxes without a specific plan. Johnson talked about the jail and law enforcement facilities being at a bustling point. He rhetorically asked, "Do we spend money right now, knowing we will have to start over in the future?" He said that leaders are still listening to the community on this issue, but added, "What is the safety of the county worth?" The price tag to be safe is expensive. Smoot said she is against spending money needlessly and that she agrees with Johnson that safety is a priority. She mentioned her father was in law enforcement for more than 3 decades. About general taxation, Smoot mentioned in her prepared remarks that Johnson was a part of the effort to pass a sales tax increase that was voted down by around a 2-to-1 margin. She told the audience she would commit to not calling for a tax election without a plan. Johnson said Midland County has one of the lowest sales tax rates in the state. He also said responsible budgeting is a way to keep taxation down. About the Horseshoe Multipurpose Complex, Smoot said Johnson has made sure it would remain a polarizing issue. She said the complex on Interstate 20 has been mentioned ad nauseum, and what is not talked about is the benefit to the community. She said data points show rates similar to the Bush Convention Center and that leaders needed to avoid willy-nilly rule changes. The contract with the operator will come back before the court in 2023. Johnson, a critic of Horseshoe leadership going back to his first campaign, has said that profit and loss statements show the Horseshoe operating at a deficit. "It will always run in the red," he said. Johnson added he has no problem with the facility, but that he would like to go over the contract with the operator to make it more friendly to the taxpayer. About roads and working with other entities, there really wasn't much disagreement between the two. Johnson said he's made an effort to improve the relationship the county has with the city. Smoot talked about the points that go into building relationships. On roads, Johnson talked about the money his budgets have put into road improvements across the county. Smoot talked about educating the community on which roads belonged to what entities. She was also critical that the taxpayer wasn't able to keep track of the tens of millions of dollars being spent on roads on the county website, something she said would be a benefit while the hefty reserve fund Johnson inherited has been whittled away. About elections and the bond election problems in 2019, Johnson said his lone responsibility has been being a member of a five-person board that can only hire or fire the elections office administrator. Johnson was one of four members of the board to decide not to fire the previous elections administrator after the problems having to do with the misplaced votes. She was transferred over to a different county position not long after. He said he has budgeted more money for the office and said that the problems that the office had in 2019 will not happen again. Smoot talked about the county judge needing to take ownership when problems happen inside county government. She also cited training as something that could have been stressed. Precinct 2. Donnelly Summers discussed ways they plan to address utilities, infrastructure, by Stuart Doreen. Precinct 2 County Commissioner candidates Robin Donnelly and Jeff Summers gave attendees a glimpse of their candidacies at the Republican National Hispanic Assembly on Monday at the Bush Convention Center. The two talked about water, the Horseshoe Complex, accessibility, and improvements they would seek in Greenwood. Donnelly is the current Precinct 2 Commissioner, and Summers is a Greenwood ISD school board member. Precinct 2 in Midland County includes some areas near or along A Street in central and northern Midland. Then there are areas of Precinct 2 north of Loop 250, moving east into the county, including Greenwood and Valley View. One thing that was apparent from this forum is that Donnelly is running on his record as a commissioner. While Summers isn't talking as much about Donnelly, but on his background as a conservative who wants lower taxes and more efficient government. There were plenty of occasions during the debate when Summers agreed with the way the county government has handled an issue, although there were times that he believed more out-of-the-box thinking would go a long way. Water appears to be a top issue for those outside the city, especially residents of Greenwood. Summers talked about the problems residents had when last year's winter storm impacted water wells and sewer. He said the time has come to put the millions in federal funds to good use. Both talked about how complex the water issue can be and the numerous entities, like the Midland County Utilities District and the City of Midland, that are involved in bringing water to residents living outside the city. Donnelly said water is an example that working with other entities is a two-way street. He said the county can't give up certain water rights for a solution that might not last more than 8 years, talking about a deal that would give the city rights to a county water source in Winkler County for Colorado River Municipal Water District delivered water. Water, like roads, was an area where Donnelly could talk with certain specificity that Summers didn't disagree with. Summers talked about his past success as working as a team builder and why more of that could be done with county leadership. About the impact on Greenwood. Summers said he wants a stretch of road from the Loop and Interstate 20 to Farm to Market Road 307 to be addressed. Donnelly said this is an area where the solution might not be as easy as it appears from the outside. Donnelly said because of pipelines and an AT&T line, it could cost an additional $5 to $10 million extra to expand this thoroughfare. Summers insisted, if it saves one life, it is worth it. About accessibility. Summers said the first time he's talked to Commissioner Donnelly was a couple of months ago, even though he's been on the Greenwood ISD School Board for more than a decade. Donnelly said a call log would show he's been responsive to calls from Midland County residents. "You took my call when I called you," Summers noted. About the horseshoe, Summers said he wants to see the facility get out of the red and bring in additional events and more revenue. He said the venue needed more than just gun and knife shows, not that he was against those. Donnelly said the facility has benefited from a professional entertainment group in charge of operations, like at the Wagner Noel. Both agreed on the permitting having to do with septic tanks and work needing to be done on flooding. This is the community from the front page. This article is entitled City Briefs: Council to Decide on MDC Property Purchase. The Midland Development Corporation Board approved a $4.9 million purchase of downtown property from the estate of J.L. Davis earlier this month. The Midland City Council will vote Tuesday to approve the purchase. This agreement provides for the MDC to purchase J.L. Davis property at 210 North Big Spring and 211 North Colorado for appraised price of $4.9 million. The agreement includes abatement cost credit of $500,000. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris previously said the move was made to further redevelopment downtown, explaining that the purchase will enable the redevelopment of a 2-acre block next to Centennial Park and give Midland the ability to attract significant projects. Previous projects for the Western United Life Building property have fallen through or proven unsuccessful due to lack of parking. Purchasing the adjacent property ensures enough land is available for redevelopment and parking, making new projects viable, Harris told the Reporter Telegram by email. With the purchase of the West Texas Gas properties, there are multiple redevelopment opportunities at play. Each opportunity represents tens of millions of dollars of private capital investment in downtown, along with new job creation and property tax revenue to support Midland's taxing entities. Acquiring the additional property is a good economic decision for Midland and represents immediate value for community. This article was written by Stuart Doreen. Council to vote on road upgrade. The council is scheduled to vote today on a motion that calls for the mill and inlay of 5 inches of asphalt on Midland Drive from Green Tree Boulevard to Crestgate Avenue. Drivers using Midland Drive in Northwest Midland could have a new surface to ride on if the Midland City Council approves a nearly $3 million cost. The council is scheduled to vote today on a motion that calls for the mill and inlay of 5 inches of asphalt on Midland Drive from Green Tree Boulevard to Crestgate Avenue. The construction cost for the change order of a project proposed 3 years ago is $2,669,785.11, with a contingency of $250,000, for a total cost of $2,919,785.11, according to the city. This will be paid for with funds from unallocated ARPA funds. Reallocated savings from ARPA funds from the Industrial Avenue project and engineering and utilities bond funds. The initial design of the project started 3 years ago, Resolution 2018-501. And at that time, Midland Drive pavement condition was considered acceptable, and the waterline project could commence with the contractor strip paving the section of pavement over the new waterline, the city offered in agenda documents. Since the initial design, Midland faced an extremely harsh patch of winter in February of 2021, just before the construction of the waterline. The combination of the stress from the substantial freeze, followed almost immediately by the waterline construction, caused the pavement of Midland Drive to erode quickly. This article was compiled from staff reports. City leaders to discuss RRC plan. Council members will discuss the first phase of a Railroad Commission plan to remediate the T-Bar well field. The city reported in agenda documents that the estimated cost of implementing the RRC plan is $9,636,495. Park Hill Services' proposal includes the ability to sell the remediated water that would offset this cost. To be able to sell the water, a Phase 1 has been developed. Phase 1 will have three recovery wells installed, remediated water main constructed, a 500,000-barrel remediation water pit built, and electrical improvements. Utilities is requesting approving the contract with PSC Services and appropriation $3.5 million from utilities' unallocated funds to perform the engineering and installation phase one. A memo from Carl Crago, utilities director, states, "The agenda item states that $3.5 million will be appropriated from the Water and Sewer Fund and appropriated to a project in the Water and Sewer Capital Projects Fund." This article was written by Stuart Doreen. This article is entitled, MPD Reports Fatal Collision at West Midland Intersection, from Staff Reports. A 21-year-old man was killed Sunday morning after his car collided with the back of a Lincoln SUV at the intersection of Andrews Highway and Midland Drive. The police department reported the driver of a Lincoln SUV traveling eastbound on Andrews Highway came to a stop at the intersection. At that time, around 12:50 a.m., Dawson Garrett Gowen failed to control the speed of the Crown Victoria he was driving and rear-ended the back of the Lincoln SUV. Gowen, 21, was killed in the collision. The Midland Police Department Accident Reconstruction Unit responded to the scene. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled, Ex-CEO of Local Company Pleads Guilty to Tax Charge, from Staff Reports. A Midland woman pleaded guilty to not paying federal payroll taxes, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Texas. Lydia Ivaro Madrigal, former president and chief executive officer for EXN, Inc., pleaded guilty to one count of willful failure to collect and pay over tax. She is scheduled to be sentenced at a later date and faces a maximum of 5 years in prison. Starting in 2013 through 2015, EXN withheld payroll taxes from its employees' paychecks, but did not make the required payroll tax payments to the Internal Revenue Service, according to the press release. In all, Madrigal, 64, failed to account for and pay $637,594.35 in payroll taxes withheld from EXN's employees, according to the press release. Madrigal also failed to pay the employer portion of the $249,536.35 in FICA taxes for 2013 through 2015. Instead, Madrigal used the money for her own personal benefit. Madrigal has voluntarily paid losses to the IRS in full, according to the press release. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Oil Explorers Fracturing at Breakneck Speed, by David Weth, Bloomberg. Shale oil companies are using almost all of the fracking equipment and crews available as exploration expands, accelerating cost inflation and pointing to worsening supply chain disruptions across the industry. North American oil drillers appear likely to expand spending by more than 25% this year, while overseas explorers are on course for a more modest increase in the mid-teens, Halliburton executives said on Monday after reporting their biggest quarterly profit in 7 years. The world's top provider of fracking services already is seeing tightening labor, trucking, and raw material supplies. And in some regions, as much as 80% of workers are transplants recruited from other areas. Even something as mundane as the sand Halliburton blasts into wells to help fracture oil-soaked rocks is getting harder to source, CEO Jeff Miller said during a conference call with analysts. The squeeze is proving a boon to Halliburton, which lifted its dividend for the first time since 2014, and said orders for pumping gear have more than doubled. The company's fracking business is working at full capacity, and oil companies are paying higher prices for so-called completion work. ConocoPhillips and peers such as Devon Energy have been warning since last year that oil field inflation was a burgeoning threat. "This is a fantastic set of conditions for Halliburton," Miller said. "Our current completion tool order book has more than doubled from a year ago, signaling strong growth and profitability again in 2022. Oil and natural gas explorers are paying record costs as the economic growth that underpins energy demand rebounds from the pandemic-driven collapse," the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas said in recent weeks. Supply chain snarls in the Permian Basin, the biggest U.S. oil field, are making drilling projects more complicated, prolonged, and expensive. Miller said there's little reason to expect things to change anytime soon. "I don't see 2023 as an endpoint by any means," Miller said. "I think the road goes on, well beyond that." This article is entitled "Oil Slides as U.S. Equities Collapse," by Devika Krishnakumar and Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Oil in New York slid as risk-off sentiment prevailed across financial markets, driven by concerns about tighter monetary policy. West Texas Intermediate futures fell 2.2% on Monday as the S&P 500 entered a correction phase amid concerns about the U.S. Federal Reserve's imminent rate liftoff. Additionally, gains in the dollar made commodities priced in the currency less attractive. Crude recently has been buoyed by robust demand in the face of the Omicron variant. This article is entitled "Market Running Out of Sellers as Oil Surges to Almost $90 a Barrel," by Alex Longley, Bloomberg. The oil market is running out of sellers in its surge to almost $90 a barrel. Whether it's speculators, traders hedging their barrels in storage tanks, or U.S. producers, some of the biggest drivers of bearish price movements have all retreated in recent months. As global stockpiles fall to seven-year lows, traders don't need to sell as many future contracts to hedge those supplies. Producers in the U.S. shale patch have shown little sign of looking to lock in future sales, according to several derivatives brokers over the past week. Meanwhile, as calls for $100 crude mount, speculators have turned increasingly bullish on prices, shying away from short positions. "The market has run out of sellers," according to Ilya Buchuev, a partner at Pentathlon Investments, an adjunct professor at New York University. The largest player in the futures market is the inventory hedger. When inventories are drawing, they cannot hedge. The lack of selling pressure helps to explain why oil prices have carried on rallying in the face of a wobble in equity markets and some other risk assets. While crude has gained more than 10% this year, the S&P 500 is down almost 8%. There's no sign that speculators are betting on a slump in crude futures in the near term. Money managers were short just 27,000 futures and options contract of West Texas Intermediate last week, versus long positions totaling almost 340,000 contracts. Last time positioning was this stretched was shortly before prices cratered by $10 in a single day in late November. It's a reminder that when shorts leave the market, things can quickly become too one-sided. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 25th. John Paul Estrada. John Paul Estrada, 22, of Midland, passed away on January 23rd. Paul was born in Midland on December 31st, 1999, to Jose Francisco and Guadalupe T. Ramirez Estrada. Paul is survived by his parents, Jose Francisco and Guadalupe T. Ramirez Estrada, sons Jesus Estrada, Giovanni Estrada, sister Catalina Estrada, brothers Jose Francisco Estrada, Frankie, Sergio Estrada, grandmother Lilia Estrada, as well as many aunts and uncles. Visitation will be held Monday, January 24th from 5 to 8 p.m., Tuesday, January 25th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Wednesday, January 26th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. All visitations will be in the chapel of Avalos, Sanchez, and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held on Thursday, January 27th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 2 p.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Death Notices. Adelina Arzate. Adelina Arzate, 90, of Midland, passed away January 20th. Viewing will be Sunday, January 23rd from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, January 24th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Ellen Robinson. Ellen Robinson, 89, of Midland, passed away January 21st. Services will be held at the First United Methodist Church in Marfa on Saturday, January 29th at 1 p.m. A private family burial at the cemetery will follow the service. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Margarita Margie Najera. Margarita Margie Najera, 60, of Midland, passed away Thursday, January 20th. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, January 25th at 2 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Richard Clutter. Richard Clutter, 91, of Midland, passed away January 22nd. There was no service planned with Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Robert Guerrero. Robert Guerrero, 58, of Midland, passed away January 22nd. Celebration of life will be held at 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 26th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Selena S. Hawkes. Selena S. Hawkes, 52, of Midland, passed away Friday, January 21st. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, January 25th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home.
Good morning. This is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. Texas governor endorses Landgraf. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, on Monday was endorsed in his bid for re-election by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. In a news release, Abbott announced the Landgraf endorsement for re-election to House District 81. Landgraf has been in the legislature since 2015. Representative Landgraf has been a tireless leader in the Texas legislature. He proudly co-authored legislation that cut taxes for Texans by $3.9 billion and has been unapologetically pro-life. Representative Landgraf has also proudly defended Texans' Second Amendment rights, co-authoring the Open Carry Bill that I proudly signed into law in 2015. I encourage everyone in the Permian Basin to support Representative Landgraf for re-election, Abbott detailed in the release. It's an honor to have the governor in my corner, along with all my fellow West Texans who are supporting me. I love the Permian Basin and the people who call it home, and I'm thankful Governor Abbott is on our team, fighting back against the Biden administration to secure the border and protect energy jobs, Landgraf said Monday. Seeking his fifth two-year term, Landgraf is emphasizing Texas-Mexico border security and his West Texas origins as he aims to help end the state's reliance on the Robin Hood funding system and standardized testing in the schools in next year's legislative session. Landgraf said last year's statewide redistricting deleted Andrews County and added Loving County to the district, which also includes Ector, Winkler, and Ward counties. Although the winner of the March 1st Republican primary will keep representing Andrews through the rest of this year, I'm very proud of the work I have done representing Odessa and West Texas in general, and I will be talking about my record and the work we need to continue doing, Landgraf said. We invested $2.9 billion on border security. Landgraf is challenged by Odessan Casey Gray, who filed to run for Congress in California in 2016 but didn't appear on the ballot, and then ran against now U.S. Representative August Pfluger in 2018. Gray, 39, has previously said he grew up in Odessa and then moved to Bangs before enlisting in the military. He has declined to say what he does for a living other than writing, retired military, in email response to questions. Last week it was reported that Gray has legal woes in Wisconsin with an April court date on bail jumping. The prosecutor in the case last week said Gray is accused of twice violating a restraining order and jumping bail on the two cases that were filed as a result of those alleged violations. Online records also indicate Gray is involved in a child custody dispute in that same county. OC Promise Program update on agenda. An update on the Odessa College Promise Program will be presented at the Odessa College Board of Trustees meeting at 6:30 p.m. today in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, 201 West University Boulevard. Aimed at first-time, full-time college students, it would begin in 2024. In an Odessa American article in early January, Vice President for Academic Partnerships, Jonathan Fuentes, said it is a last dollar in scholarship opportunity for the class of 2024, so it is open to those graduating seniors that will be part of the class of 2024 that will be first-time in college students beginning in summer or August 2024. It will cover tuition and fees. Vice President of Student Services, Kim McKay, said in the same article that the program has been implemented throughout the nation and has increased first-time in college going rates, as well as graduation rates. And so we feel like this is an opportunity for us to support students all the way through the pathway, not just with first class free and some of the momentum incentives that are built along their pathway, McKay said in early January. It will incentivize students that remain full-time students to ensure that they complete in 2 years and can transition seamlessly into a transfer institution or into the workforce. Some of the other items on the agenda are a report on downtown design updates, consider and approve Associate of Applied Sciences in Construction Management, consider and approve Bachelor of Applied Arts and Sciences in Early Childhood Education, a report on institutional effectiveness, a Vision 2030 Plus update, the President's Report, Smart and Strong Start Spring 2022, Drive to Success Virtual Kickoff, Athletic Academic All-American, a visit from the Texas Speaker of the House, Representative Dade Phelan. COVID-19 news by the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 34,486 total cases, 601 deaths. Midland County, 34,048 total cases, 433 deaths. Texas, 6,010,673 total cases, 78,544 deaths. U.S. cases, 72,502,837 total confirmed and 890,980 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Medical Center Hospital has released its COVID inpatient numbers for MCH as of 8:30 a.m. Monday. 95 COVID patients in-house, med surge non-critical, 69 COVID patients, includes one pediatric patient, critical care, 26 COVID patients, 19 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 4 unknown, 20 COVID patients on ventilator, 19 unvaccinated, 2 vaccinated, 4 unknown, age ranges of COVID patients, 5 years old to 98 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Albuquerque, New Mexico, 2 from Andrews, 1 from Artesia, New Mexico, 1 from Balmoray, 1 from Crane, 1 from Fort Stockton, 2 from Kermit, 5 from Midland, 1 from Monahans, 1 from Pecos. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with DOCS Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot, located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR tests and rapid antigen tests available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket costs. No appointment needed, however, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results via text message. To pre-register, visit docshealthtesting.com or text DOCSTX to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the DOCS Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Quick Hits Neighborhood Watch Program Meeting. The Odessa Police Department has scheduled a Neighborhood Watch Program meeting from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. today at the OPD Classroom, 205 North Grant Avenue. The program was designed to keep citizens informed of activity occurring in their neighborhoods by forming watch groups within their neighborhoods. It's a neighbor helping neighbor program that has assisted in reducing crime within our community. This program is an alliance between the citizens of Odessa and law enforcement. Citizens become the extra set of eyes and ears for law enforcement, reporting suspicious activity to police, along with working together to resolve problem areas. For more information, call OPD Corporal Steve Lesieur at 432-335-3361 or Corporal Michael Hamilton at 432-335-3322. Tom Segura, I'm Coming Everywhere, World Tour. actor, comedian, writer, podcast host, Tom Segura, will bring his I'm Coming Everywhere world tour at 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or more information, wagnernoel.com. Pediatric COVID-19 Pfizer Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a pediatric COVID-19 Pfizer clinic from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday. First and second doses for ages 5 to 11 years old. The clinic is first come, first service. Vaccines are free. For more information, call 432-498-4141. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library Children's Department has scheduled Read to Felix at 4 p.m. Thursdays at Third Floor Auditorium at the library, 321 West 5th. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/2p94nvdp. Waterworks Receptions. A two-part reception for Waterworks will take place Thursday from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery, and from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Alan Noel Art Museum. An artist talk is scheduled at 7 p.m. at the museum. Selected works will be displayed at both the Cardozier Gallery and at the museum through April 24th. UTPB will also be hosting the exhibition Waterways on loan from the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street program. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Town Halls. Ector County Judge Candidate Dustin Fawcett has scheduled at 6 p.m. at the following dates and locations. Thursday, MCM Grande Fundome, 6201 Business I-20. February 1st, Kellis Turner Community Center, 2230 Sycamore Drive. February 3rd, Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane, Gardendale. February 8th, South Ector County Center, 4455 West Apple Street. For more information, email dustin@dustinfawcett.com or visit tinyurl.com/BDEHYRRF. Motown Experience. I Love My Selfie, 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, has scheduled Motown Experience featuring vocalist Me Esther Wright and Kaylee Sims from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday. Seating is limited. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/2p9ehrhn or tinyurl.com/5xswmkkj. Wild for Wildlife Family Science Night, Petroleum Museum, 1500 West I-20, Midland, has scheduled a Wild for Wildlife Family Science Night from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. Admission is free. Museum members gain early admission from 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. For more information, call 432-683-4403 or visit petroleummuseum.org. Chocolate Decadence Fundraiser Gala. The Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled the 16th Annual Chocolate Decadence Fundraiser Gala at 6 p.m. Friday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. There will be decadent chocolate treats, delicious food, craft cocktails, enticing live and silent auction items, and more. Proceeds will go to Permian Basin stroke survivors dealing with aphasia's communication challenges. Reservations are required. For reservations, to donate, or for more information, visit aphasiawtx.org. Cody Jinks, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland, has scheduled Cody Jinks at 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Doors open at 6 p.m. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/E79MUUTM. Meet the candidate. Ector County Commissioner Precinct 2 Billy Tripp has scheduled Meet the Candidate from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane, Gardendale. Visit tinyurl.com/MT62KH6X. International Connection Night. Odessa First Assembly, 1101 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled International Connection Night, a cultural experience with friends of many backgrounds, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday. The theme will take on a Turkish flavor provided by the Friends at Peace Academy. Visit tinyurl.com/YC486MY7. New space telescope reaches final stop millions miles out. Cape Canaveral, Florida. The world's biggest, most powerful space telescope arrived at its observation post 1 million miles from Earth on Monday, a month after it lifted off on a quest to behold the dawn of the universe. On command, the James Webb Space Telescope fired its rocket thrusters for nearly 5 minutes to go into orbit around the sun at its designated location, and NASA confirmed the operation went as planned. The mirrors on the $10 billion observatory still must be meticulously aligned and the infrared detectors sufficiently chilled before science observations can begin in June. But flight controllers in Baltimore were euphoric after chalking up another success. We're one step closer to uncovering the mysteries of the universe, and I can't wait to see Webb's first new views of the universe this summer, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said in a statement. The telescope will enable astronomers to peer back further in time than ever before, all the way back to when the first stars and galaxies were forming 13.7 billion years ago. That's a mere 100 million years from the Big Bang, when the universe was created. Besides making stellar observations, Webb will scan the atmospheres of alien worlds for possible signs of life. The high-flying drama began within days of liftoff. A sunshield as big as a tennis court stretched open on the telescope in early January, 1.5 weeks after the Christmas Day launch from French Guiana. The observatory's gold-coated mirror, 21 feet across, unfolded a few days later. Monday's thruster firing put the telescope into orbit around the sun at the so-called second Lagrange point, where the gravitational forces of the sun and Earth balance. The 7-ton spacecraft always faces Earth's night side to keep its infrared detectors as frigid as possible. At 1 million miles away, Webb is more than 4 times as distant as the moon. Wow, what a ride this last month it's been, said Amber Strawn, a deputy project scientist for NASA. Considering the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, which orbits 330 miles, 530 kilometers up, Webb is too far away for emergency repairs. That makes the milestones over the past month and the ones ahead all the more critical. Obituaries: William Bill Dean Jr. Leander. William Bill J. Dean Jr. of Leander passed away on January 19th at the age of 97. He was born on September 7th, 1927, in Sepulpa, Oklahoma, to parents J. and Margie Miller Dean. Dean is survived by his 2 daughters, Robbie Edwards Mansus and husband James, and Becky Novak and husband Doug. He is survived by several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Mr. Dean was preceded in death by his wife Marjorie Williams Dean and two sisters, Dorothy Woodson and Helen Webb. The service for Bill Dean will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. on February 1st at Beck Funeral Home in Cedar Park, Texas, to be followed by military honors at the gravesite at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Veteran Cemetery at Killeen, Texas. Gail V. Geis-Hyman, Odessa. Gail Victoria Hyman, age 83, passed away on Thursday, January 20th in Midland. She was born on February 22nd, 1938 in Pecos to Victor and Adeline Wixon Geis. Gail married Don Hyman on July 30th, 1955 in Carlsbad, New Mexico, and they shared many wonderful years together. Gail is survived by her husband, Don Hyman of Odessa, son Mike Hyman and wife Susie of Odessa, and many grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, Victor and Adeline Geis, son Dan Hyman, grandson Matt Hyman, and great-grandson Jude Hyman. A private memorial service will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Southside Baptist Church in Monahans, 1402 South Main, Monahans, 79756. Arrangements are entrusted to Family Services Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family online at www.fsfp.com. Death Notices. Hector Bulliard, Odessa. Hector Bulliard, 59 of Odessa, died Saturday, January 22nd in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 27th at Odessa Christian Faith Center. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Don Claywood is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Claudia B. Lambert-Torian, Odessa. Claudia B. Lambert-Torian, 91 of Odessa, died Thursday, January 20th in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.